Chapter 32. On the Grey Ocean. Pray the waters. I am so sick of war. Nargis, make war sick of us. Sea Pearl, with most of the Allied fleet, pursued the remnants of the Pellish flotilla back toward Pexlia. A captive had told Cressa two co-admirals commanded and controlled the Pellish fleet from two sister warships that served as headquarters. Ambrise had been searching for these for many moons, but they moved so often and hid so effectively that each lead evaporated into mist. Finally, one midnight, Don Jarrett climbed aboard Sea Pearl with news.
Lord Ambrise, Lord Ambrise, we found the Pellish admirals.
Show me where.
Ambrise rushed Jarrett into the chart room as Cressa followed at their heels.
Here, in the west quadrant.
What a sweet secret bay on the leeward side of Little Fern Isle. But Larrett and I, we know it well.
Larrett led Sharkgracer right to them. Instead of standing to fight, the Pellish turned tail.
Prince Mickle says you're to follow at once. He's in pursuit.
Ambrise weighed anchor and sent word to the rest of his fleet. If they could catch up with these vessels and sink them, the Allies would break the last might of the Pellish navy.
Now Ambrise joined Cressa on the forecastle, spyglass in hand. He stared at the dots in the distance a while.
You are enjoying this, she accused her lord of the ships.
Yes, he admitted.
Their admirals will want to get to harbour before we catch them. Now comes the test of seamanship. Who can ride the winds and currents better? Who can put on the most sail without damaging the masts? Hold the wheel in exactly the best line and work his oarsmen so as to get the most out of vessel and men? This is a race, not a game of cat and mouse, but a match of sailing skill.
They're so far away I can hardly see them, said Cressa. Aren't they winning? Her husband put down his glass and moved behind her, wrapping his arms around her waist and holding her back against his chest.
Oh, my heart. Early days. Nothing but open ocean and weather between here and Pexlia. The only thing I worry about is that under cover of a storm, they might try to double back on us. Watch and wait.
Waiting is hard. I have been waiting for years. Our daughter won't know us anymore.
What a wonder it will be to see her. She'll be a young woman, mused Ambrise. Though I doubt she's keen on frippery and needlepoint. She was my royal rascal before. She can't have changed that much. Surely her talent has manifested by now. I wonder what Nargis has in store for her.
If this is really the end, our next destination will be back to Cascada, said Cressa, pursuing her own train of thought. I'll sail into harbour with all these allies as escorts, and you and Mikkel at my side, leading 2,000 mariners with news of a conclusive victory. We will be welcomed, and I will clean house. A long-fought triumph, a costly triumph, but a triumph nevertheless. Only when I sit again on the Nargis throne will I forgive myself for abandoning my country and our daughter.
Little by little, the Weir ship gained on their foes. Now Cressa could see the warships clearly, even without a telescope. No other seamaster could equal Ambrise's skill, so the other ships of the Allied fleet fell behind. Only Mikkel's Dromon Sharkracer kept neck and neck with Sea Pearl. Often her brother mouthed teasing words at Cressa, but she couldn't hear him over the seas and wind, no matter how much he mimed. A middling gale blew up from the south. Ambrise worried so that the Pellish vessels might change course in the night that he sent a lookout aloft, even in the worst of the weather.
Cressa thought he took risky chances with the lives of his men, but she held her tongue. This whole war had been a desperate gamble, and they had to win out.
The storm left the Allied ships scattered farther behind, nearly out of sight on the sparkling waters. But Ambrise had made the wind work for him and had gained ground on his competition. The only thing about the storm that disquieted him was that he had planned to transfer Cressa and her maids to a non-combatant vessel when they drew closer. Now that option was foreclosed. On the sixth week of the chase, their lookout spotted land. The coast of Pexlia stretched like an indistinct cloud on the water in the distance. First with a spyglass and then with her naked eyes, Cressa could read their quarry's names painted on their wooden bows. Pexlia's Pride and Pexlia Unconquered. She could see their sailors as little figures on deck. She wondered if they looked back at Sea Pearl and recognised their doom. Ambrise spoke to each watch in turn and sent signals to Shark Racer, "Prepare for battle." The wind shifted to spur them on. After so many weeks of waiting, the last hours thrilled and terrified the Queen. She went inside to her stateroom.
"Arletty, I need to change out of this dress. Piquetta, fetch my sword and scabbard and my dagger."
"You don't intend to fight yourself," said Arletty.
"Certainly not. I'm hapless with a sword.
But it heartens the men to see their queen girded for battle." Piquetta pinned Cressa's hair up and out of the way. Cressa checked herself in a looking glass, satisfied that she conveyed a martial air. But she was loath to go back on deck for more anxious waiting.
"Fetch me something to eat, Piquetta, just anything, and get enough for you and Arletty too."
The Pearl's stores were low because it hadn't stopped to reprovision for a long time. Piquetta came back with dry biscuits slathered with jam. Cressa forced herself to eat two pieces to keep up her strength. Arletty, who had grown increasingly tense, couldn't eat a bite. Although Cressa had confidence in Ambrise's and Mikkel's superior abilities, she too found herself wishing there had been a method of removing her women from the sight of a battle.
"Sit down, Arletty, and try to eat," she coaxed her wardrobe maid.
"Oh, Your Majesty," said Arletty. "Are you certain our soldiers will win the day?"
"Absolutely."
"But what if Baelish board the ship? What if they break in here looking for you?"
"Bar the door."
Arletty examined the door bar and whispered to Piquetta.
"What?"
asked the Queen.
"The door bar is not very thick. What if they kick it in?" "Oh, Arletty, my dear, you are dwelling on things that will never happen.
Here, take some brandy to settle your nerves."
"I wish I could hide somewhere," said Arletty, wringing her hands.
Cressa looked around the stateroom, her gaze alighting on a trunk of clothes.
"Here, see if you fit inside here."
Arletty climbed in. If she curled up like a frightened child, Piquetta could close the lid.
"But you'll smother in there," said Cressa.
"Here, get out a moment while I cut some air holes."
She used her dagger to chip away at the wood, glad that no soldier saw her misusing a fine weapon in such a manner, and glad that Nana didn't see her defacing a fine chest. When she was certain that Arletty would be able to breathe, she turned to her older maid.
"What about you, Piquetta? Are you all right?"
"Yes, Your Majesty, but perchance I could have just one more swig of brandy."
"Of course. Drink as much as you like, then give the flask to Arletty in her nest. Maybe she'll drink herself to sleep, and when she wakes, it'll all be over."
Cressa squeezed Piquetta's hands and patted Arletty. "Time for me to go on deck to watch our great victory."
Outside, she saw that through his own magic, Ambrise had closed the gap even more.
The Pellish ships foundered in the waves, tantalisingly close, almost within arrow range. A few overeager men-at-arms on Shark Racer loosed their bows, but the pitch of the swell threw the shots too high or too low. Ambrise wouldn't let his archers loose. He ordered the mates to hold the men back. Ambrise's eyes shone with excitement. The black-sailed ships threaded a narrow channel through rocky shallows and then resumed their southern route, paralleling the coastline. Cressa looked with interest at the high limestone cliffs of Pexlia, cliffs the maps indicated eventually gave way to the bowl-like harbour of Ixtulpus, a large city famed for shipbuilding. Fighting in the harbour would be bloody and costly of life. They needed to catch up with Pride and Unconquered before they could berth. An arrow shot from an enemy vessel whizzed by her. Captain Clemson and Sergeant Dariush, her constant shadows, yanked her behind the cover of the forecastle, pulling out the swords they kept so carefully oiled and sharpened. Now Weir mariners took careful aim. Skilled at compensating for the ship's movement, they hit their targets on the enemy's deck. The battle had started. Arrows struck flesh on both ships. Sea Pearl aimed for Pride, leaving Unconquered for Mikkel. They closed distance every second, skimming the waves with sails so taut and oars pulling so hard that Cressa feared the cloth or muscles would rip at any moment. Ambrose shouted orders, his sailors jumped to adjust. Pearl pulled even closer. Would Ambrose ram the ship's stern or heel to for boarding? Cressa saw his sailors warming their arms up, twirling the ropes tied to grappling hooks. A prickle of anticipation, she often forgot that she too had Lothar blood, prompted Cressa to glance up. On the clifftop, she noticed a large gathering of people. She had just time to murmur, "That's odd." All of a sudden, whoosh! A fireball the size of an ox flew from the cliffs, striking Sharkracer. The missile tore through the ship as a dagger smashes through custard, crashing through the decks with a noise like thunder, setting the ship ablaze throughout its path. Frozen in shock with her hands over her mouth, Cressa saw more fireballs rain down on the Lothar ship and then on her own, catching the vessels in a deadly barrage. "It's a trap!" she screamed. But no one could hear her over the fearsome noise of impact, the roar of the fire, the cracks of big sails torn loose in a high wind, and the screams of terror. With an incredible tearing, grinding sound, the Pearl's high ram crashed into the stern of the Pellish vessel. The collision knocked everybody off their feet. The upward pitch of the deck made Dariush slide from her side, helplessly slipping into a jagged hole created by a fireball. With a shriek, he vanished from sight. Another fireball hit the prow of Sea Pearl, and the fire spread to the entangled Pexlia's Pride. Fighting now was out of the question, as men could not board either vessel through the wall of flames. Both ships listed to starboard, while the untended helm whirled wildly and untethered sails snapped in every direction in ragged freedom. Face rigid in shock, Ambrose regained his feet and started to work his way back to her, yelling, "Cressa! Cressa!" All of a sudden, an arrowhead poked out of his chest. It had pierced him through from behind. In horror, she saw Ambrose fall to his knees, waver half a second, and then pitch forward onto his face. In that instant, Cressa knew for certain her husband was dead. "No!" she screamed, her hands braced on her knees. "No! No! No!" The rending pain in her own heart engulfed her. Despite the chaos, Clemson had managed to stay beside her. Now he pulled at her arm, jabbering about boarding the ship's boat, yanking her back to a modicum of consciousness of her own peril. Queen Cressa tried to stand straight on the listing, burning deck, finding it hard to balance. All around her, casks and people, alive or dead, slithered on the slantwise surface like dishes on an upended table, crashing against obstacles in their path. A line from a sail hung near her. She reached up to clutch it for support. "Your Majesty, Your Majesty!"
Clemson urged. Come with me, this...
The line she tugged on hung from a massive mainsail in flames. All of a sudden, the fabric tore free from its upper spar, landing directly on top of her. Cressa was enveloped inside a dirty white covering. Instantly, the air became unbearably hot.
Clemson! She shrieked, Clemson!
But opening her mouth was a mistake because the hot air seared her lungs. Her faithful captain did not, could not come to her aid. Frantically, she clawed at the cloth, but she couldn't dislodge it. Sparks spread from the sail to her clothing and her hair. She was burning, and she could not see for the swirling smoke. She sank to her knees, trying to crawl her way out from under the flaming blanket, banging into a piece of wood much too heavy for her to lift that held the material tight against the decking. Finally, she thought to pull her dagger and slice wildly, letting in cooler air. With a few more wild slashes, she managed to make an opening wide enough to free herself of the engulfing sail. Stumbling on the deck, she batted at her smouldering clothing. Her legs, her upper chest, her back and her hair were on fire. The ship listed at an even steeper angle. She could no longer see Clemson or anyone in the cloud of black smoke. Were her clothes still burning? She had to quench the fire. She had no choice, no choice at all. She took a running leap off the deck, jumping for the sea, now lapping only a few paces below her.
Lotan, the Munificent.
She hit feet first. The impact, the salt water up her nose and sinuses, and the friction against her burns caused an explosion of agony that turned her vision black with jagged edges. Cressa almost passed out. She reached for that oblivion. She longed for oblivion. But traitorously, her body broke the surface and she gasped for air in the cold sea water. At last, all the flames had been quenched, but they had done their damage.
Lotan, show mercy. Take me. I have nothing left.
Waves dashed her face and she spit out salt water. She dropped her dagger during the fall. Far off, she heard a young sailor screaming in high-pitched terror,
Mama, save me! My mother would have recognized that this was a trap. I've failed.
Here, here!
Shouted a male voice close by.
Swim to me!
A short distance in front of her, a wooden debris field and a man's wet head bobbed up and down. Could it be Clemson? With the last of her strength, Cressa kicked the short distance to the caller, buffeted by disorganized waves splashing her in the face.
Who is it?
She asked. The smoke, the water, her shock, her vision blurred.
Prince Mikil,
he said, and she recognized her brother's voice.
Who are you?
He reached for her arm and a layer of burned fabric and skin sloughed off, turning the water around them red.
You're so burned. Where can I grab you?
Kicking to hold herself upright, Cressa held her hands out of the water to show their conversion into black char.
Don't touch, she croaked. The Royal Stone. Shrimp, is it you?
Cressa!
Mikil!
Kia, I'm passing you this bit of ore. Use it for support,
said Mikil.
Lean on it wherever you can.
No.
She ignored the debris and spit seawater out of her mouth.
Or I'll grab your clothes. Tell me the best place. What about your waist?
No,
she breathed.
Cressa! Through the grace of Lotan, I'll save you, I swear it.
Mikil, I'm in torment.
body and heart. Every second.
A large splash hit them both in the face. Mikkel dashed the water out of his eyes and met her pleading look.
End me,
she said, her voice hoarse.
Lotan won't let me drown. I can't do that. Of course you won't drown. And your injuries will tend to them. You can't undo my failure. You can't bring Ambrice back. No, but I am queen. Don't make me beg.
She put her last strength into her voice to make it audible over the noise of surf, the crackle of fire, and the far-off screams of dying men.
Mikkel, I am your sister. Don't make me suffer any longer.
A long moment elapsed as a wave lifted them both high and then dropped them both down.
Will I have to use my talent on my brother? Forgive me,
he muttered.
Nothing to forgive.
She raised what was left of her hand to her mouth in the opening of the Queen's blessing, and then felt his firm grip on the nape of her neck and the merciful, clean touch of metal at her throat.